Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Style That Binds Us podcast. We are thrilled to have Jenny Boyd with us today. She is a former model and she has written books, Jennifer Juniper and Icons of Rock, which has been newly released. She has a PhD in psychology. We previously had Jenny's sister, Patty Boyd, on our podcast, and we cannot wait to talk to Jenny this time about her life, her books, musicians, your fabulous rock and roll life, living that whole experience. So thank you so much, Jenny, for being here.
My pleasure.
So the first question, this is talking about your newest release, the Icons of Rock book. So will you introduce us to that book and tell us which of the musicians' answers resonated with you the most?
Yes, so this originated from a book I did in, came out in 1992 of the musicians I interviewed between 1988 and 1990. And so, excuse me, what happened is that was when I was living in the States, came out in the States, came out in Japan. Then when I moved to England, it came out in England under a different title. It was called It's Not Only Rock and Roll. So all these years later, now what, 35 years since I did the interviews, hate to say it, but I did actually destroy most of the cassette tapes because they were taking up so much room. And I was traveling from here to there, to England, to different places. And I was so conscious of not letting anybody steal one or take it or,
Right.
because the musicians had trusted me and I wanted to honor that. And so I thought, well, I'm never going to use them again. I might as well just do that. And then I don't have to have them in bank vaults or locked away or this or that.
Right.
So I did, in my kind of madness, thought, well, I don't need them anymore, never going to use them again. But I saved eight. I don't know why or why I chose these eight.
Okay,
So
right.
that was George Harrison, Ringo, Don Henley, Tony Williams, Graham Nash, Ravi Shankar, Eric Clapton, Joni Mitchell. So I saved those. So this book, for the first time ever, I've transcribed the whole audio tape, and that's in the book. So those we have the full tape, and then I've also got other books, other musicians like Keith Richards or the others that were in my previous book. And instead of coming little snippets of it under different titles like Collective Unconscious or Drugs and Alcohol, it's completely, you have a page or 2 pages or 3 pages that'll say Keith Richards. And so you have all of that together. So you don't have
Oh,
the
yeah, that's good.
full interview, but and then I wanted to compare what the music world is like today compared to 35 years ago. So I got new musicians, younger ones, like Jacob Collier, let's see, a very nice woman, musician woman who was big in the sort of 1990s and did sort of boppy, poppy stuff. And so she and people believed that everybody had their own song inside them. So she was teaching people to find their own song, write their own song. So I thought she was good as a way of describing the power of healing in music. And then Atticus Ross, who's had many Grammys for doing film music. So that was quite a good take. And a prolific songwriter called Egg White. And he had written songs for people like Adele. And so they were allowed to tell me, they were able to tell me how different the music world is now compared to then.
That's fascinating. And didn't you write the book, the first edition of it? Was it your thesis or something about your
Yeah,
thesis?
it was my PhD. I'd got my master's in counseling psychology, and then I decided I didn't want to be a therapist. I want to write. And so I thought, well, the only way I can really be made to write and have a date that I have to have it done by would be if I actually did the PhD course. And so that was my thesis, and it was then called the creative, the spiritual and creative connection, or because I believe it is a very spiritual thing, creativity.
Oh my goodness. How old were your girls when you decided to do this? Do you remember?
To do the actual thesis, the actual dissertation. Probably one was about 15 and the other was probably about 17.
That's what I love that. That, you started this whole new layer of your life, when your kids are that age, people think it's too late. So my
No, never too.
question, you know how sometimes when you tell a story and then someone remembers it completely differently, I was wondering about how when they told you stories about times when you had been with them in the past, did you all remember it the same? Like, did you remember times when you were with Eric Clapton, when he was describing it to you, did you remember it the same way? Or is it, I'm always curious to know, you were in the same place. Did you see it two different ways, for example?
No. I mean, and the thing is with Eric, he was newly in recovery. So he was
Yes.
able to be reflective. And,
Uh-huh.
I used to hang out with them a lot. So when I moved to
I
England for
know.
5 years, back to
Sure.
LA, I lived just around the corner. We were mad. We would kind of
Yes.
go to each other's houses, my sister,
Yeah, it's
him,
like
or.
families.
Yeah, it was definitely family. And yeah, there were, when he was drinking, when we'd go to some of the shows, and my little kids were little then, they'd just sit on the side of the stage, watching. And there's one time I seem to remember he was just lying on his back on the stage and still playing his guitar, completely out of it. So yes, he was right. I knew what he was saying because, I'd been there.
You remember.
But
You probably do
yeah.
better than me.
Yeah, but we were all kind of, not angels
Sure.
anyway.
That was the time. Exactly.
Yeah. And say with George, when he'd be describing just him as a person, he was a very gentle person and had a real spiritual awareness. And that's what I saw because we all felt that, at a particular time. So, no, I think it was if it was somebody I knew well and they were describing, I would know. But I think what they were describing more was how they felt about the creative process.
Exactly, which is so to have a window into that with these legends is just phenomenal.
And it was so much easier to get hold of them because, some of them were family or then married to Ian Wallace at that time, and he was going out with Bonnie Raitt and Don Henley and Crosby, Stills and Nash. So it was great because I'd see a lot of them. We'd all go on the road together, so it was easy for me to get those people. Whereas nowadays it's very hard. There were some people I would, still more people I would have liked to have interviewed, young ones, but they all have teams now. It's not just you've got to get hold of the manager. Jacob Collier was different, was just the manager, and they were brilliant. They were so nice.
That's great. That is wonderful. And really, the younger people today listen to the music, of our time more than their time, I feel like, anyway. You know what I'm saying? It's
True.
interesting.
That's true. Yeah. I'm going to New York next week to be, I've been asked to go to this Beatle Fest. It's like the 50th anniversary of the Beatles. No, 50th anniversary of him doing the Beatle Fest. He'd asked John Lennon, can I do it? And John had said yes. So he does this sort of every year, either in Chicago or New York or different places. And this is the 50th anniversary. So I'm going to be talking, the other people are going to be talking. And I think it's going to be fun and a lot of people. So I'm going to be talking about Jennifer Juniper as well as the Icons of Rock
Yes, of
in
course.
yeah.
And when is this?
That's this coming weekend. So let's see. No,
Oh,
not
wow.
rolling it out. Not this weekend, the following weekend. So it's
Yeah, that's
the
amazing.
9th, 10th, 11th.
Okay, that's amazing. That's exciting. We need to.
Is Patty
Is
coming?
Patty going?
No, she's not. She went to the Chicago one last year. Yeah.
Take turns.
Yeah, exactly. So let's talk more about this creative process and musicians. I'm sure that is such a huge part of the book, and I know some drugs and alcohol and all sorts of things go into that creative process. What are your thoughts about all of that?
I knew before I started asking them questions, I'd know, obviously we all lived together for Fleetwood Mac stuff when we were living in England. So I knew what musicians, I lived with musicians, you know, it's like, and seen a lot of, say, the Beatles or seen Fleetwood Mac and over the years. But when I started asking them questions, just me and them, the person I'm interviewing in the room together and asking them questions that I'd never talked to them about before. And so it was wonderful for me because normally I think a lot, no, a lot of them, in fact, pretty much all of them said they'd never been asked questions like that before because you don't say, you know, what was the muse? What's the muse like? Because nobody talks about the muse because it's so delicate and so sort of, you know, you don't understand it and it's a bit magical. But when I'd ask them questions like, had you experienced this thing called a peak experience, which is the same thing as the muse, where you just feel that you're almost like a vessel to this higher power that is the actual creativity that's coming through you, they all talked about that. And I didn't know that they would all talk about, and I remember Eric saying that he thought he was the only one that had ever experienced that, but had never talked about it before. So I was asking them all those questions. I was asking them, you know, like, what is the drive to create? And things that they hadn't been asked before. And I think because it was a dissertation and because it was a research, I was able to go deeper. And they responded. They went deeper.
They really did. That was so fascinating. It's just, it's a priceless piece of work that you put together in the history of rock
Thank
and
you.
roll,
And
truly.
it wasn't, thank you for saying that. You know, it wasn't like, what did you have for breakfast? You know, it was,
No, you know, and I'm sitting there reading about Fleetwood Mac, Buckingham Nicks, these, you know, that was my first concert was Buckingham Nicks, you know, Fleetwood Mac, the whole
wasn't,
thing is just your, nice to be able to speak to
And
you
I
about all
bet,
this.
yeah, that's great. And I got the feeling they hadn't talked about this stuff before. They hadn't talked about it. Because all of them had said when I'd finished, wow, you know, I've never had an interview like that.
Isn't that
It was
remarkable?
like a therapy session for some of them, you know. It was,
You let them really talk about their creative process.
Yeah, what really goes on inside.
And then they were so kind of protected and famous that those just weren't the interviews that people were after, unfortunately. But I'm so glad that you did. And I was wondering about, do you feel like, I know from the book, Juniper, how your experiences with Mick on and off and all the things that went on with him. And then, you know, we had talked to Patty about with George and Eric and everything. Do you feel like when someone is, you know, they were all young when they became so incredibly famous, do you feel like it fame affects everyone, you know, in a super dramatic way, or do some people handle it better? Or what were your thoughts about living up close and watching that kind of adoration?
Yes, well, all the Fleetwood Mac, and it was all pretty out there in the open. To begin with, when they were recording, when Stevie and Lindsay joined the band and they were making their first album. And then they did Rumours. You know, it's like they had to be done, had to be done within a certain amount of time. So that's, I think the first album was called just Fleetwood Mac, and that's when the cocaine came in, and so they could stay awake. But then they'd get back after thinking they'd done something amazing the night before and realize it wasn't that amazing, you know, because they were just so out. I think. So I saw it was hard for me because I was the only one that had kids. So it was me in as much, oh, okay, their father's not coming home at night, you know, or He'd be so wasted, or he'd be so hungover in the morning, or not wanting really to talk, or, you know, so it was very different for me than for them.
Yeah.
Although, you know, I could have fun with them, and that was great, or sometimes the kids would all come down to the studio, that was fun. But
Yeah.
it wasn't easy being a mum
Right.
and
Right.
being in
Sort of
the role.
separate. Right. You had to protect the girls from that, I'm sure, in some way, and figure out how to
How
navigate
to do
that.
it.
Well, I'm proud of you for doing it.
Thank
How are
you.
the girls now?
They're wonderful. And I got grandchildren
Good.
too. My grandson's 30 this year.
Wow.
What?
That's
I
mine.
know.
I'm 32.
You're kidding me.
No.
You're ageless.
Thank you.
Ageless.
You and Patty definitely lived such fascinating, fast-paced, fabulous lives. So, how do you think you two were able to handle the ups and downs of life married to these rock legends better than many of the people in your circle?
That's a very good question. I think because my feeling is that Patty and I led a very crazy upbringing. We were in Africa. Our parents were really not really, you know, my father was kind of had a really bad accident during the war, and he was just staring at the wall. You know, he wasn't sort of all there. My mother, who was very beautiful and vivacious and everything, and they'd moved to Kenya because her parents were living there. And we weren't really looked after. I mean, we had a nanny that sometimes I'd see her and sometimes not, and then I'd get threatened, you know, by the Mau Mau, or, you know, it's like we were feral. We were really, really just feral. And so if you think of it, the rock and roll world is just like kids. They're like kids who are feral. You know, it's like we knew that world pretty well in a different kind of way. We grew up in that.
That is
So,
fascinating.
yeah, I don't know. That's my own kind of take on that, I think.
Do you think you developed
But
that?
I have to say, we also loved music. I mean, we loved rock and roll. We really loved, you know, from an early age, I remember jiving with Patty, you know, at sort of from when I was about 8 or something. You know,
Yeah,
loved music,
exactly.
loved dancing, and loved the world. And I think the whole world of music, and I think, you know, musicians, you know, when they're not up on stage and doing all that stuff, can be very sensitive, you know, they're artists. And so there's that connection to that.
Yeah, I think they feel more things than a lot of other people. Right, they take in a
That's
lot of
right.
happiness, but also the sadness. I'm sure you thought about it a lot with all of your psychology courses and things like that. How just the whole experience that you had and the way people react to different things. I'm going to change the subject totally, sort of, totally. What was your favorite Fleetwood Mac song? Do you have
Ooh,
one?
do you mean Fleetwood Mac when Peter Green was in the band as well, or are you thinking more Stevie and
Either.
Lindsey?
It can be one of each or just one main one. I know it's a hard question. It's kind of an impossible question. I can't even answer it.
Oh my God, that's a horrible question.
I know. Maybe we don't even answer it.
I don't even think I have one. You know, it's like the ones with Stevie and Lindsey were just so great. You know, so brilliant, and
I
Chris
know.
as well. And Peter Green, when he was in the band, you know, so soulful. Man of the World, Albatross, you know, just beautiful, beautiful. I think so many of them really touched my heart. You know, they were just fantastic.
I bet. I spent a summer in Innsbruck in college, and we had a cassette tape player, and every time we traveled every weekend on the trains to go to little places, and we had I can't even remember. I don't think it was Rumours. I think it was the one after that. We had that cassette and we played it all over Europe with us. We just kind of took it where we
Really?
went. Yeah, it's like the an anthem to that time, you know, and like that's what music does, which I love. Well,
It
yeah, I
does.
can't
It
think of a
really
thing.
does. I heard about this. It was like a, I don't know, a research of some sort about the power of music. And they had a certain number of people, and they had just 60s music there for I don't know how many days. They have their 60s clothes on, and they say, and there was something, some kind of research that went on like that that showed that they hardly aged at all. It must be more than a week. It must have been for some time. That this music is so powerful and so evocative.
It really is. It really is. My father has Alzheimer's and, very quiet until the music comes on, especially if it's music from when he was younger. He is up, he is dancing, happy, he's right. It's really amazing. And it
Yes, I
really
love
is.
that. I've heard that.
And you helped write two Fleetwood Mac songs, right? But of course, you didn't get the credit.
No, because they're the boys.
I know. Isn't that awful? Well, tell us which songs.
Okay, so when I was just found out I was pregnant, and we were living. Let's see, Peter Green had just left the band, and so Mick was very worried that the band wasn't going to be able to carry on, that they would just disperse because Peter was their leader. And so we all went to go and live in this oast house. Oast house is like where they used to make beer, and so they would sort of there was an area where they could rehearse, and then there was an area where we could sit and all eat. And I remember I just found out I was pregnant. And Chris was saying to me, look, we've got to come up with some songs because Peter was one of the main songwriters. Chris wasn't even in the band then. And Danny Kirwin, who was in the band, all he could, you'd hear him playing his music, beautiful guitar playing, just singing la 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 because he never came, found it very hard coming up with words. So Chris and I put together the song July Judy because my best friend was called Judy. And Chris knew her well, and she became everybody's best friend. And so that was the that's what we wrote that together. We wrote the lyrics, and
That's
I think
amazing.
Danny put it to me. And then the other one was then we moved to a place in Hampshire where we all lived together, and Danny was desperate for any kind of lyrics, and he said, "Well, I've heard that you write poems. Can I have a look at your book that you write poems?" And so he looked at this book, my book of poems, and he picked out one called Purple Dancer. Purple Dancer. And then he put it to music. I think it was the B-side, because they had the singles then, and it was the B-side of the
Incredible.
single.
That's incredible. That really is. Well, now you're getting credit. We'll tell
Yes.
the
Finally, this is what it
world.
took.
Exactly.
So, of course, the album name was Rumors, is Rumors. So, how did all of these rumors that were swirling around the band and the behaviors going on affect you emotionally? And did it lead to your career with your PhD in psychology and studying human behavior?
I think it affected me because Mick and I weren't getting on either. It was really tough. So it was like all of the couples, including me and Mick, were having a hard time. And I have to put it down to drugs, alcohol, it was and all this fame and suddenly, huge, huge. And it happened so quickly. And I think Mick sort of started thinking that he was like the leader. He was kind of trying to keep it going, but he was like on this treadmill, like a hamster in a cage. He couldn't get off it. So it was tough. And yet I'd go down to the studio and listen to, say, Stevie singing, and you knew it was about Lindsay, or just if Chris was singing and it was about John, and you'd walk into one room and somebody'd be crying, and it was, but there was this feeling of love always, of we all loved each other, but it was tough, and especially, well, I was going to say especially for them, but no, especially for Mick and I as well, with our kids, and he's out of it or he's on the road, and then he's fine, it was tough for everybody.
comes
But
back.
With them, they had to stick together, you know, because they were on the road and they stay every night and, you know, keep going.
I'm thinking back to the book and his parents and, you know, all the different things that you went through with all of that. But just think you're a remarkable person.
Thank you.
We've touched on it, but can we talk a little bit more about your childhood? Did you spend a lot of time with your grandparents? And then y'all were at a, you lived, I mean, you were like in boarding school for a while too?
No, what happened? So I was in Africa, in Kenya, from the age of a few months till I was 6 years old. And I vaguely remember seeing my grandmother sometimes, even though they lived nearby. And so so that was kind of, you know, as I say, very sort of not easy and very insecure. And a lot of the photographs of that time, I'm leaving with my head leaning against Patty because I'm thinking, well, better stick with her, you know, because she's going to be all right and I'll be all right if I stick with her. She's like 3.5 years older than me. And and then my mother met somebody else. She divorced, and then she met somebody else, and then they went off to live in England with our younger daughter, well, our younger sister. And then I was just stuck with this father who sort of was staring at walls. Patty and Colin were in boarding school, so it was, you know, we didn't go. I didn't see my mum for about 6 months. So 6 years old, you know, it's pretty traumatic. By the time I remember, she was about to have a baby, you know, so that was all very different. And so I thought that I better be a good girl because they might shove me back to Africa. So it was always that feeling. But thank goodness, you know, as siblings, then we had two more brothers, and as siblings, we were very close and still are. Unfortunately, Arthur's younger sister, she died about, I don't know, 10, 12 years ago. But even so, we were very close as siblings. Thank goodness we had each other.
Yes, even though you were sort of dispersed in different areas of the world sometimes.
Yes. And let's talk about raising daughters. So many times as a single mother, but then also famous father, rock and roll, kind of trying to protect them, but include them. How did all of that go?
That's tough. It's really tough. I think it's very tough for kids of famous parents.
Oh, sure.
Or a famous parent. And I think because they would see their dad out of it. And then when I moved to England was to actually get them away so that, you know, we could have our own place in the countryside, sweet little school they went to. And a lot of people hadn't heard of Fleetwood Mac. So that was good. So that was exactly what you were saying, is that, you know, trying to protect them. And then after 5 years, but then Patty and Eric were just round the corner. So they, you know, they definitely grew up in a rock and roll kind of atmosphere, crazy stuff. And then I met a musician, Ian Wallace, who I'd met at Christmas at Christine Lee's house, and we all went to Christmas, spent Christmas there. And so then when I moved back, my older daughter said she didn't want to go back. She wanted to carry on with her friends going to boarding school. So in the other one, I thought, well, I'm bringing her back. She's not allowed to have a choice, you know, because she was too young. And so all that, like, what's the right thing to do? I don't know. So there was a lot of that. And at the same time, I wanted to go back for them to see their dad.
Right.
Even though they can come and visit us. It was, yeah, anyway, but he was still sort of not in a great way. But, and I think, I remember my daughter, my older daughter, when she was 15 and I was going to school, or when she was a little bit younger, and she was saying, I'm so proud of you. Or, you know, it sort of felt nice that you can actually, you know, do something that feels, it's not to do with rock and roll. It's to do with something completely different, you know, that I was
Absolutely.
After. And so when I did actually start going to college, because I'd never been to college before, it's a big step because it meant I couldn't go on the road when I was, you know, we want you on the road. No, you couldn't do things. I couldn't go to, you know, David Crosby's wedding. So my then husband would take the kids. Things like that. It's really hard just standing up for what I wanted because I'd never done that before. So it was a big deal. And the very first day that I arrived at the college, they weren't sure whether to accept me because of my background, whether I could actually, you know, hang in there. And the very first day, we were sort of, you know, all around this big table. And everyone had to give their names, what, you know, what they were doing there, what they would like to achieve, blah, blah, blah. And I could see it getting closer and closer to me. I'd been in this rock and roll bubble. I hadn't been with normal people. And I'm thinking, oh, no, you know, it's getting closer and closer. And I'm going to speak with an English accent and I'm going to grow, you know, put attention on me. And so just as before my name, I tried to put my hand up to say I'm going to pass out, but I just passed out. The anxiety of that, because I was doing such a huge step, was enormous. Next thing I know, I'd come around. Somehow they got me on the table, you know, and I was kind of, you know, thinking I didn't want to be noticed. It was like, well, they were all these faces.
Here you are. Right.
Yeah, so
it's really remarkable how much of ourselves we give away.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Of doing something for yourself. It's a great thing.
Right.
But also, I think, do you think because of the relationship you had with your mother, it was extra important to you to, no matter how hard it got, to just keep plugging in, you know, keep going with your daughters and, you know, working hard on that?
No, because I felt that my mother, I didn't feel she was really there for us because she had six children.
I know. Right.
And a husband that she was frightened that what if he leaves her, you know, or
right.
You know. So we kind of, you know, I remember when I was offered my first job to be a house model for Fole & Tuffin, the designers, I didn't even tell my mom. She didn't know I'd left school. I didn't mean not to. I just didn't think of it.
Sure.
She didn't even ask. So it was. So when I had my children, I felt I had got my own way of being as a mother.
Yeah.
I didn't have someone that I felt. Well, actually, mixed mother was a good person for me to.
Right.
A great mother.
Right.
Good mother.
You're a very different mother than your own mother. And she did her best with her circumstances. But
she did
yes,
her best,
I think that.
That's what I've said to her. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. Most definitely. How long did it take you to interview all those musicians?
2 years.
Was it months? 2 years. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, not solid because still I was writing, but then I'd go to England, do some of them, then I'd go to New York and interview
someone
there.
Else, right.
Yeah.
And will you tell us about your modeling career? And you would get to model with Patty and Paula. That was lovely.
That's sweet. I didn't mean to be a model. I kind of fell into it, first of all, as a house model. And, you know, Fole & Tuffin, Sally Tuffin, Marion Fole, they were just the nicest people to work for. You know, because I was really shy and they were just so sweet and so nice. And I loved their clothes. They were the first ones that did pantsuits because nobody had done that before. And I loved that. It was great. And all the clothes were made for me and they became my clothes, you know. So sort of 16, 17, I was wearing what every girl would love to have worn, but probably couldn't afford, you know. I was very lucky. And then at some point, you know, it got to where they said, you need to be, you know, some of the editors of magazines were wanting to do photographs of me. So I was told to go and get myself an agent. Before I knew it, I was kind of in the modeling world. And then it was lovely when Patty and I see each other and that photographer, David Bailey, took photographs for Vogue and the two of us, well, quite a few of the pages.
Yeah.
And but my thing that I liked doing was, you know, where they'd all learned how to do, because I was younger, the catwalk, and they knew exactly when to turn and do all this stuff. I hated that. I only wanted to dance. So when I'd go to interviews, I would just say, I just dance, that's all. And so I was getting a lot of the gigs that I think some of the other models thought they should be getting because they'd spent their money on, you know, learning how to catwalk and stuff, because I just like that kind of free spirit sort of thing.
And Jenny, I have a question for you. So, women in general, but certainly your mother never taught you to do anything for yourself or much about confidence or self-esteem or anything. So, what advice that must have been extremely brave, courageous, and difficult for you to say, you know what? I'm not doing this anymore. I'm completely changing paths. I'm going to go to school. I'm sure you got a lot of different reactions from everyone. So, will you give some advice to women about finding their way, and it's never too late, and all of that, how to stay strong through all of that?
Yes, because when Mick and I, we got together, then we'd get separated, then we'd get together, when we were really young. And then when we actually said, yes, we can marry and all that stuff. And we were living in Notting Hill Gate in an apartment there that we shared with his bass player friend. And I'd been offered from the woman who was the main editor, Vogue, who knew me. And she said, I would love you to come and work at Vogue. And that's, you start working at Vogue, that's kind of, so I just,
Huge.
to me, it's huge. And so I told Mick, and he said, no, I don't want you to do that because I want you to be free so that you can come on the road whenever I want you there. It's like, oh, okay. And I would say that number one, have your own thing, or have something that is yours, something that lights your fire, because you're just as important as them. It's really important. And I was what,
Really is.
22 probably then. And I think that's a very important thing. And so that's why it became very hard for me to when it was time for, and I realized I'm interested in not only psychology, I was interested in nutrition, I was interested in a lot of things. And so the BA was in holistic health, because I realized I used to be interested in that years ago. What happened? And so, and that what happened before that is I had actually a near drowning accident in Hawaii, Maui, which I thought I could breathe underwater because I'd been given the magic mushroom. And I was with Ian and then a couple of his musician friends, and when I got through that and I thought I was going to drown, I mean it was really scary, and when I got out of there I thought, okay, now I'm ready to give back to life. So the first thing I did when I got back to LA was go to a 3-month course on talking to kids in state schools, young kids, about drugs and alcohol. Well, I was too shy to do that by myself, so we'd go in pairs and go to schools, and this person I was with, would do all the talking, and then afterwards I'd sit and the little kids would come around me and I'd have lots of colored bracelets on so they could talk to me and sort of play with my bracelets, and so that was the beginning. And then I thought, okay, now I'm ready to take the next step. So it was sort of conscious decision of as if I'd been asleep. I used to be awake and then I've been asleep and now I've woken up.
Yes, that's great. I hear so many of my clients will say, I don't know what's happened to me. I used to be a this or, that kind of thing. You do, I think, as women, especially, we kind of lose ourselves in the middle somehow.
And I think having children, you lose yourself because you're all there for them. So you're trying to be wife and everything, but then your children take away in a way a lot of stuff that normally you'd be able to do for yourself.
Exactly, because they're dependent on you. They're children, so
Well, they're your all-encompassing thoughts,
have to
feelings,
keep those
everything.
ones right. That's exactly. Well, back to the rock and roll book again. Were most of those interviews in person, or were they on the phone? How'd you get all those
I would
interviews?
say most of them were in person. There were some that were on the phone, like Peter Gabriel was on the phone. I think maybe B.B. King. Willie Dixon was in person, went to his house and very sweet. That was nice. So most of them were in person. I preferred that, obviously.
Oh, sure. Yeah, much better with the body language and everything else.
And it's probably such a nice gift that you gave them to, they never maybe sat down to reflect and think about all of that. And then they probably learned maybe from the other interviews from other musicians and
exactly.
It made them all stronger.
Like you said, Eric thought he was the only one. So to see these other people, they were all having this experience.
Yes. Yeah.
Any favorite musicians? That's another tough question.
Favorite interviews or favorite musicians? Favorite musicians?
Both.
Oh, gosh.
I know that's too hard. The favorite interview is too hard, but.
Well, I will say, but I mean, I love the sound of Crosby, Stills, and Nash.
Yes.
I loved all the Fleetwood Mac songs. They were just brilliant. You know, the Eagles, you know, Don singing.
Amazing.
And just all of them. Yeah, George, you know, Eric.
Too much. Oh my gosh, of course. Yesterday I was walking through Central Park, and which is near my apartment, and there was an old man near the fountain, and he was singing "You Look Wonderful Tonight." You know, and I know. I said, you know, I know the woman who that song was written about. It was just that's such a, you know, you all have had such fascinating lives.
Jenny, did you watch Daisy Jones and the Six?
No, and everybody keeps asking me. I should.
Yeah, you should.
It might be too close to home.
Maybe I don't need to.
I mean,
No, you might say, oh, I remember that. Right.
Yeah,
you need to watch it.
Yeah.
I know, and I feel like that music is just the ultimate. I mean, the stuff today is good, but I feel like those 60s, 70s songs are just such forever classics. And then I guess each new generation discovers them, and then their parents are rediscovering the music or maybe listening to it in a whole new way.
Yeah, that's interesting that you say that. Yeah, because I feel that. But then I'm, you know, younger. And, you know,
exactly.
Yeah, it is classic.
Oh, I was just saying the mood, you know, music, it just like you, whatever mood you're listening to, a fest song or a rock and roll song, and it just puts you in this whole frame of mind.
And it's all about connection, you know, if a musician's on stage and he's connecting or they're connecting to the audience, you know, that's so important. People need that in their lives, whatever.
They really do. I think they really need it now more than they're getting.
Okay. Any takeaways from living that rock and roll life that we can use in the future? Like, you lived that whole counterculture movement, and now you see the world is really kind of unstable, and there's so much isolation and loneliness and issues worldwide. Do you have any thoughts on a better way?
No, my feeling is it's all about connection. You know, that's why it's fun for me going out and talking to people or talking to you guys or whatever it is. It's about connection. You know, we're not alone.
Yes.
That's the most important thing. And it's fun for me. You know, it's like, yeah, you want to hear this story? I'll tell you.
Yes.
And that's nice. Connect, you know.
Right.
One's voice becomes one's instrument. Then you can share stuff. And
Well, this is magical. Well, we cannot thank you enough. And I really did treasure reading all of it.
It's been really nice. Real pleasure. Yeah. And good luck with it. And, you know, I hope everything goes
thank
well.
Thank you. Have fun in New York.
Yeah, thank you. I'm looking forward to that.
Have a fabulous Beatles Fest, and we hope to get to see you in person soon, and have a wonderful rest of the week.
And you too, both of you. Thank you.
Thank you.
You so much.
I love it that you're mother and daughter. That's so cool.
Thank you. Okay. All righty. Bye-bye.